weekly edition of the Asri Report. And joining us on the line, we have Asri's Imran Bakas. Imran, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam, and thanks for having me.
All right, so there's a lot happening in South Africa at the moment, but interestingly, we're taking a look at the past, 29 years ago to be specific, 2nd of February 1990. Did F.W. de Klerk take a suicidal leap of faith in this week of that year? Do we owe him credit?
Well, I certainly don't think that de Klerk took a suicidal leap of faith on that day. I think just too much was happening around him. I think a large number of South Africans will be paying tribute to de Klerk over this weekend and sort of giving him credit for where the country is right now. But my take would be too much was happening around him. I think for one, we had the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, and which some scholars like Fukuyama have called the end of history. So I think in some ways for the National Party, that meant the end of the threat of communism. I think within the country, we know the country was in flames. You know, the apartheid state was plunged into its deepest crisis ever. And thousands of people were on the street, you know, as part of the mass democratic movement. So I think the National Party was in complete disarray. There was a need for change. And de Klerk had not earlier gone into the more conservative bloc of the National Party. So the fact that there was the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was internal strife, there was pressure coming from outside, big business and apartheid's traditional supporters in the world, you know, we're pushing for change. So I think in many ways that contributed to de Klerk going with the change that he made or that he contributed to in 1990.
Do we perhaps still owe him some credit, or even a little credit, due to the fact that unlike his predecessor, P.W. Botha, he didn't remain stubborn, he didn't remain oblivious to what was happening around him in the country and internationally, and he took that decision, albeit under some degree of duress, if you like?
No, absolutely. You know, in some ways, I think those before him, like P.W. Botha, did not have the courage to do what he did. But remember that the context in which he operated had also changed since the time of P.W. Botha. P.W. Botha had suffered a stroke, and then following that, there were monumental changes happening in the world. And I think that the antagonism to the National Party and the apartheid state was growing. And in order for de Klerk to even protect big white business in the country, it would have meant that he needed to have taken the steps that he did. But I do agree with you that he had the courage, perhaps more than those prior to him, to make the steps that he did, despite what was happening within the country and around the world.
Now, at that same time, 1990, how did the outside world view the ANC and the PAC?
That's really interesting, because I think the ANC, and perhaps to a lesser extent, the Pan-Africanist Congress, we're gaining more and more respectability in capitals of the world. You'd remember that the ANC had representatives in many major cities around the world, and each of their chief representatives were almost elevated to the status of ambassadors. So even though, you know, it was the era of Thatcher and Reagan, in many countries around the world, leaders of the ANC or representatives of the ANC were being consulted. And I think the world was able to see that change was imminent, and it was important for them to recognize ANC and PAC representatives as almost ambassadors of South Africa. I think that too contributed a great deal to allowing or to making the National Party realize that the end was near, and there was certainly a need for really radical change in the country.
Now, coming back to the aspect of de Klerk, and there are those who would refer to him as an accidental icon, there are others who see him otherwise. In many ways, the debate still continues with his legacy. Even of late, when people talk about Jacob Zuma and whether he should go to jail, you would hear a response coming from some quarters as well. If de Klerk is not in jail, why should Zuma be in jail? How do we look at his legacy? How do we define his legacy?
Well, it's certainly a contested one. I mean, de Klerk was a significant part of the apartheid state was complicit in a number of apartheid atrocities. And I think the calls that many people make for de Klerk to have been sent to prison are made in that context. Of course, we recognize the major changes that he was forced to make in 1990 also. De Klerk was certainly not looking for a Nobel Peace Prize. I think he was looking to defend the interests of big business. And to put it crudely, you know, to defend whatever vestiges of white privilege that could be protected. And the ANC also faced a conundrum at that point, you know. 30 years underground in exile, in jail, was taking its toll. And like I said earlier, the collapse of the Berlin Wall, the unbundling of the Soviet Union, and all of that contributed to the change that de Klerk made. One would remember that if the ANC ignored de Klerk's overtures, it risked losing control of this transition from authoritarian rule to, you know, an alternative that we now have. So, you know, I think de Klerk was marched into the transition and in some ways perhaps even kicking and screaming. So in that context, I think he's an accidental icon, not necessarily a hero, but I think forced to make the changes that he made, driven by the changes that were happening outside of South Africa, and certainly the significant and fundamental changes that were taking place within the country.
How would you assess his legacy subsequent to that? We know about the government of national unity. Thereafter, he kind of left his own party, and many say that was the beginning of the end for the party. De Klerk's role post-democracy, how would you assess it?
Well, I don't think de Klerk made any... I think his contribution in terms of driving the changes he made was significant. But I think post that, the role he played politically was not significant. I think de Klerk found himself in a really difficult situation, despite the fact that, you know, many would argue that he came from the more enlightened camp in the Nationalist Party. But I think, you know, de Klerk could have played a greater role in the immediate aftermath of apartheid and in the first cabinet in which he served. But I don't think the role he played is anything to write home about.
That whole period, Imran, in many ways it still continues to be relevant to the political discourse. We know the EFF, for one, you know, talk about it, and they're very critical of the decisions that Mandela made during that period, the early 90s.
Well, if you're talking about the decisions Mandela made in terms of economic policy, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, I think that too. You know, Mandela comes to power in 1994. The forces of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, are overwhelming. Essentially, South Africa needs to rebuild the country. It needs massive loans. You know, the country led by Mandela are forced into IMF and World Bank loans in 1996, what has come to be known as the Class Suicide Project. And I think many people are really critical of that, because this adoption of those loans and what we call the neoliberal paradigm, I think, had a devastating impact on poor people. And I think in the latter part of the Mandela presidency and during Mbeki's presidency, you know, we lost 1 million jobs, we had 2 million people evicted, we had 10 million people who were cut off from either their water or electricity. And I think all of this was pointed back to the decision that Mandela took in 96 in order to take those loans, and those loans came with a whole range of conditionalities. But I think, to be fair to Mandela, and the fact that he himself acknowledged his limitations in terms of understanding the intricacies of economic realities, I think perhaps that critique should be leveled more at people like Mbeki and the advisors around Mandela, who had forced him. Remember, Mbeki was a trained economist, and who had forced him to make, had advised him to make the decision that he had made in terms of the class suicide project. So I think while we can be critical of Mandela, and while it's important for South Africa to have that robustness in terms of how we don't just romanticize our leaders, that we're open to criticizing them, I think we also need to bear in mind that the decisions Mandela made were driven by a particular context that he found himself in.
Imran, as always, fascinating talking to you, wonderful insight, and we look forward to the next occasion, inshallah.
Okay, shukran. Thanks for having me.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
That was Imran Bakas of Asri with this week's Asri Report. Interesting line and perspective he took this week, and that is to focus on what happened this time 29 years ago, and that is the decision made by F.W. de Klerk to unban the ANC, to release Mandela, that kind of thing. And the impact that it had on the legacy of de Klerk, and what were his motivations at the time, and the, what led to that in terms of the country. I think that is key for us to understand. All right.